Good morning and welcome. I will convene this meeting of the Lincoln County Board of Commissioners for Wednesday, April 18th, 2018. Commissioner Hunt is away, but Commissioner Thompson and I are present, and that constitutes a quorum of the Board of Commissioners. First item of business is the adoption of the consent calendar. Items that are routine or have been discussed at previous meetings. Mr. Belmont.
Commissioners, can we please pull item H1? We got a little more work to do on that. I think you have some information on that.
Right. This is the proposed agreement between Lincoln County and the State of Oregon Department of Transportation for the South Lincoln County Pollinator Habitat Corridor Project. We have had a lot of interest in this, especially from our communities in South County, and I just want to offer them reassurance that this is in the pipeline. It's moving forward. The last sticking point was ODOT was initially reluctant to include an agreement to continue their no spray pledge for this 25-mile stretch of Highway 101, but after some outreach by me and by Representative David Gomberg, ODOT has agreed to revise the draft agreement to include a three-year pledge of continued no spraying in the proposed corridor with a reevaluation at that time. So they have not, however, been able to update the language and bring that to us, but they said they'll get that to us as soon as we can. So, with that, I would entertain, unless there's anything Commissioner Thompson wants to highlight or remove, I would entertain a motion for approval of the consent calendar.
I'll make that motion.
Thank you, and I will second the motion. All in favor of adopting today's consent calendar, please say aye.
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 And the record will reflect that we pulled item H1.
Correct. No public hearing, no decision in action. So, discussion and information. The first item will be presented by Mr. Belmont. And actually, are these two somewhat interrelated, Mr. Belmont? Both are discussion and information items. So
they are.
Can we talk about them together? The first one is, these are both agreements between Lincoln County and the City of Lincoln City. The first one for building official services. The second to allocate jurisdiction for dock permitting to Lincoln County. Fill us in, please.
The first item actually is something that's occurring on a statewide basis. This is the only agreement of this nature we're going to be looking at in Lincoln County, but it actually is a reflection of the State Building Codes Division. Went to the legislature at the last session with some concerns and issues around whether or not a local jurisdiction can contract for building code services. Contract all those services to provide a city with building inspection services, or whether or not, in the opinion of the Building Codes Division, you had to have an employee of either the jurisdiction itself or an agreement with another public entity so that the building official, him or herself, is an employee of that organization. Interesting legal question. I disagree, frankly, with Building Codes Division's interpretation of this. The legislature took this up and actually disagreed with it too, because they did not pass legislation that Building Codes Division wanted that would have made this a requirement of the law. And so we thought that was that, and we were going to go forward. And instead, after the legislative session ended, the Building Codes Division actually has recently sent out notices to a number of jurisdictions around the state, including to Lincoln City, saying, you have to do what we said. You have to have a building code official who is either an employee of the county or employee of the jurisdiction, or you have to contract with, like in some cases, I think COGS are doing this work, on ORS Chapter 190 multi-jurisdictional agency, or with the county. So we're faced with, Lincoln City's faced with this dilemma of they're having a requirement that the Building Codes Division place on them that needs to be taken care of, or there's one of two options that occur with this. One is they enter into disagreement with us, or they get out of the business, and guess who gets it? Plopped on us.
Us directly.
Yeah, so yep. This would be our responsibility if they actually got out of the business of doing this. But frankly, we've gone back and forth with Lincoln City in the 30 years I've been here. There's been periods of time when we were the building official and the building inspector for Lincoln City. There were periods of time they had a person on staff. There's been periods of time right now, and actually for a lengthy period of time, in which the services were provided through a contract. I can tell you this, in my discussions with others around the state, that somebody, one of the jurisdictions, is going to challenge legally Building Codes Division's position on this matter. So it's a matter of getting in front of a court and making a final determination whether this is, whether the actions here are an unlawful delegation or not.
Commissioner Thompson has a question for you, I assume.
So since I represent the Planning Department, and since this requires more work to the Planning Department, and the staff is fairly well stretched now, explain to me how and what the consequences are.
Good point. And as we've had lengthy discussions, I've met with the planning director and the building official on a couple of occasions here to talk about this. And the way this particular agreement works is the building official we would provide those services in terms of oversight of their program. They will still have their contracted employee who will do the actual inspections, do all that work. And they will take responsibility for that. We've actually crafted this agreement in such a way that removes any kind of liability or responsibility for us should there be something, ultimately goes on. We're working on how that oversight will work. But here's the problem is, if we don't do this, Lincoln City will actually get out of the Building Code Division business, and immediately we will be responsible for not only doing the work we're doing under this agreement, but all the inspections in Lincoln City. And if you want to see a problem, that's the problem.
Okay. So either we work with them or we get more.
It's either us or us.
Us or us.
Okay. Now, the question is, anytime you get into jurisdictions like this in building codes, there's always some conflict in related to what is right and what is, and it varies by who the building codes person is. Some people are more liberal in their approach to the law and other people aren't. In cases like that, how do you write? You're the lawyer who has to write the agreement.
Yeah.
Can you give me, do you think you can write an agreement that will not ultimately wind up in conflicts and we wind up being the second us again?
Yes, and here's how we've done that, is that, again, there's a process you should go through that would bring some decisions up to the building official in his capacity, our building official, in his capacity as building official. He will make the calls on those particular issues, if there's an issue that comes up. For instance, if a contractor disputes the determination that's made by the inspector out there and it needs to come up in an administrative manner to the building official to make a call, that's what the building official will make that call. And that's clearly our authority to do so. We need to do that in order to comply with the requirement that there is a building official who's an employee of a jurisdiction. If there's a further appeal of that, or if the city wishes to do further enforcement kinds of activities on there, our building official will continue to operate as the building official, but the city is responsible and will pay for all actions or activities related to the enforcement, including but not limited to any kind of administrative appeals that had to go to the Building Codes Division. If there was something they wanted to do enforcement that involved going to municipal court or the circuit court, they will be responsible for all those actions and all those costs. And we have indemnification language in here that should, and this lead to some kind of claim, such as a tort claim, anything like that, the city indemnifies us for all the actions that it takes related to this. This is as tight as I think we can make an agreement that gives us, gives them the cover of having a building official who is an employee of a jurisdiction, but also keeps the responsibility with the city ultimately for all the actions that are taken. So, we've left this with a provision that we can terminate this with. We have to give 60 days notice, but we have the ability to terminate. We're going to see how this works. Obviously, all the jurisdictions, and this is happening across the state. I can't remember the exact number, but I wanted to say it was 40 or 43 jurisdictions that are having this particular issue come up and having to deal with this. And ultimately, there'll be a resolution to the courts. Again, I think Sum City and the League of Oregon Cities as a participant will be challenging this particular determination that's made by Building Codes Division, and we'll get some kind of resolution to this in the future.
Yes, Commissioner Thompson.
I'll agree to this because I think you have the experience, but I'm concerned because I don't know the individuals from Lincoln City, and this is going to be more a case of rather than just the contract. It's going to depend on the personalities of
Absolutely.
The individuals. If you get the right people with the same mindset, it may go wonderfully if we run into people that have got a diverse approach toward these kinds of things. We may be back dealing with this.
Well, I know this. Even though they've been contracting for services, we know the both the company they're contracting for services for and the person who's been doing it, as I understand, for the last 10 years been doing the inspection services in Lincoln City. So there is interplay and interaction between our building inspection program and Lincoln City anyway already, and they're comfortable with saying, you know, we're in a bind here, we understand this, can we help out to you know, we'd rather help out than have the program dumped back in our lap. Let's put
it that way. That's my question, because building officials change.
Yeah.
And do we have a clear pathway?
We have an ability to terminate the contract with pretty short notice.
Okay.
If something goes wrong.
So are you asking, since this is discussion and information, asking for our agreement to bring it back for action at a future meeting?
Yes.
Next week? Okay, yes. Are you comfortable with that, Commissioner?
I'm comfortable with that.
Okay, yeah, given what we've discussed, I'm fine with that.
So let me tie into the second issue here, and this has been a little bit of an ongoing issue, and it's really a jurisdictional question that revolves, it's actually one place in the county that we have this issue, and it's at Devil's Lake, where you've got an urban growth boundary that encompasses the entirety of the lake. So there's some properties that are inside the city and some properties that are inside and under county's jurisdiction. But you have a process for...
Outside, you mean?
Outside.
Okay.
That are inside county's jurisdiction, but outside the city.
Oh, I see.
Some that are in the city, but not under the county.
Okay.
And what you've got is a situation where occasionally we get these applications to put docks in. And I'm looking at Mr. Kenyon, who knows well how this works, because he's dealt with a couple of issues under county jurisdiction with these docks. And there's always been a problem with the fact that the dock starts on land. Every one of these docks starts on land and then ends up in the water.
That's the nature of the dock.
And what we've got is the problem is that the...
The
county ends
obvious.
Up, the way the jurisdiction is actually divided, the county ends up with the jurisdiction over the water side of the issue.
Exclusively, right?
But when it starts in the city has jurisdiction over any of the permitting that's accomplished. So oftentimes you'll have, for instance, the dock itself will be in the water, but the boat storage facility will be up on land, or things leading to it. So this has been a little bit of a problem we've had over the past in terms of who issues, who's responsible for the building permits. When it starts, the Division of State Lands, which actually issues licenses for these docks here, makes you have a landward address for any of the applications. You can't have a standalone in the water kind of situation. So this has been a little bit of a problem over the years, and we've sat down and talked about this now, and we think we've come up with a solution that really works well, and that is that the primary responsible agency under this agreement, when the property, the land side property, is located within the city limits of Lincoln City, will be Lincoln City. And we're willing to enter an agreement to say they can be responsible for the permitting, and that includes all the landward side and the dock into the water. And if the dock starts on property that's under the jurisdiction of the county and outside the city limits, then the county will be responsible. So we have a really clear line of demarcation here, and this agreement basically just reflects that agreement.
So no new workload, essentially. No. It's just clarifying who is in charge of the existing workload.
Yeah, and in fact, it clarifies it, but it also, in some cases, the city has come to us and said, well, will you do the permits, with something that's in a city, and we don't want to be applying city zoning and all those kinds of things, as well as the permitting process there. So this just makes a really clear line, and everybody's agreeable.
And my impression is, these often, when they do come up, they end up being controversial or complicated or both, but we don't get a lot of these, do we?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No. But this is an opportunity to kind of take care of this particular issue at the same time.
Questions or comments, Commissioner? Okay, are you comfortable with us bringing this back when Mr. Belmont is ready? Next week also?
Next week also.
Okay.
As long as you bring the dock to land. I hate those docks.
All righty. So we'll move on. We don't have any business as a governing body of a countywide service district, so we're on to reports. And we will hear from our assessor, Joe Davidson. It is budget time again, and things kick off with looking at the proposed CAFA grant, and that stands for County Assessment Function Funding Assistance Program.
Oh, you stole my first sentence.
Sorry. Take it away, sir.
Okay, yeah, I'm
Joe Davidson, County Assessor, and I'm here to present our annual county's application for the participation in the 2018-19 CAFA program. As Commissioner Hall said, this is the County Assessment Function Funding Assistance Program. It was enacted by the Oregon Legislature in 1989 through House Bill 2338. This was at a time following a period of economic downturn in the early 1980s. The counties were facing budget cuts at that time and failing to maintain regular appraisal cycles and failing to maintain accurate real market values at that time. So this led to kind of a disintegration in the Oregon property tax system, where properties were being assessed and taxed unfairly across counties, depending on their underlying staffing levels. So CAFA was kind of the legislature's attempt to reverse this disintegration and provide a kind of a boost of support and recognize a shared responsibility across the state for statewide uniformity and accuracy in assessment taxation. So that's kind of the background of how the program was created. The way it works is it's a grant program. It's funded by county revenue. And the sources of this revenue are, at the time, there was an increase in the fees for recording documents in the clerk's office, as well as an increase in the interest for delinquent taxes. And the revenue created from those increases is, to this day, deposited into a local account where it bills interest, and then that, those funds are then transferred to the state CAFA fund along with all the other county funds where it continues to build interest. And then on a quarterly basis, that money is then distributed back to the counties based on the amount of expenditures that they file in this grant application process. So that's kind of how it works. Actually, prior to distributing the money back, the state actually retains 10% for their own appraisal purposes as well, as they're in charge of appraising some of the high-dollar industrial properties and centrally assessed utility properties throughout the state. So they take 10% for that, distribute the rest back to the counties. And it's all based on how much expenditures we file in comparison to the other counties. And if you look in your packet, this is really similar to previous years, the way we've organized it. The first page is actually Form 1 in the grant application, and it has to do with staffing levels for assessment and tax services. And as you can see, this carries over beyond the assessor's office and tax office. It goes, there's a portion of a FTE claimed for the BOPTA, which is managed in our clerk's office. That's our Board of Property Tax Appeals. Carries over into the GIS department, which is in our surveyor's office, as they support our GIS mapping, which we use a lot in assessment. And also our IT services, as they support our day-to-day functions and software and hardware. The only change this year in staffing, there was an approved GIS position this year to facilitate our new assessment tax software that we'll be converting to. So there's an additional half of a FTE claimed for this next year there. We don't anticipate that position to be started to be in place and functioning until probably halfway through this next fiscal year, and so we're only claiming a portion there. That might go up a little bit next year as once they're in place. The next page, Form 7, is the expenses associated with these departments. It's kind of organized as a matrix. Shows personnel services, materials and services, transportation, associated with each department on the top section. And then indirect expenses, which is kind of a product of the operating expenses. And then we're also claiming, like I mentioned before, our software system that we'll be converting to. We're claiming some money there for capital outlay. That's what that dollar amount is. And in comparison, you can, in the next section is the same two pages, and so you can compare them there. Any questions so far?
Just yeah, sure. Quick question. You know, we just approved not too long ago the new A&T software program, which includes a schedule, you know, for implementation, and it unfortunately goes out a little ways now.
Yeah.
So this capital though reflects that current.
It does.
Exactly.
Yeah. We don't anticipate finishing in 18-19, but we do. It is in the schedule to at least begin the project toward the middle of this next fiscal year. But it might be a year or more before we complete. But there are some upfront costs associated with that project, and so this is a portion of that.
And we'll catch the rest of it, probably in the next step.
Yeah, we're trying to tie payments to benchmarks as they complete certain processes. So that's that. And then the next section is just some summary data. The first couple pages is a summary of funding. It shows the funds that we've received over the last several years and forecasted to receive this year and next year. And actually, I don't know, the top two, 17-18 current and 18-19 proposed, those are just estimates. I think one of them says final. That's actually an error. You might want to.
Can I jump in here?
Yes, sure.
So this is when we usually offer up our yearly gripe, and get it on the record again that when this program was created, if I remember correctly, the pledge from the legislature was that, you know, again, I think it's important to reemphasize what you already said, Joe, that this is money we've collected that they're sending back to us, but the original pledge was that this would pick up 50% of the cost of the assessment and taxation function. In fact, that peaked in 2001-2002 at just under 44% of the actual cost, and it has been on a pretty much, well, it bumped along, but it's the trend has been downward, and that actually we're flat funded for the coming year, but because of increasing expenses, it represents picking up only 16.09% of the actual cost, which over the 20-year life of this program is going to be a historic low, it looks like, for costs covered. So
yeah, and that
just
is
to get that on the record.
And that this next year, that might be a little bit of a low estimate.
Correct.
Yeah, it's just carried over from this last year. So mm-hmm. based on the a little bit more that we're claiming this year, that could be a little bit more than the 493. And the you mentioned 1-2. That's the same year that the state was actually kicking in some additional special payments.
Yeah, they did for about 8 years,
yeah.
And then that went away, unfortunately. Maybe Association of Counties needs to push a little harder. We've tried to get the ear of legislators about this, but about reinstating those payments. Commissioner Thompson.
Joe, it's probably before yours, and maybe a question more of Wayne. If I remember right, they used to come through and tell us what we had to do all the time when they gave us the money. Now that we're down to 16%, are they interfering with the way we operate?
Not
like
in
they
a sense of, they do. I think they do some reviews, Joe, still.
Oh, yeah.
They're,
I mean,
they're looking at these kinds of things. What they're not pressing, you know, there was a period of time, and I do recall this because we were very involved with some questions to Department of Revenue. They come in and tell us we need to add, you know, three more appraisers, or
right.
We need to do our cycles here and there. And that was, at a time when they were providing 50% of the funding, we had discussions back and forth. Mm-hmm. But they've backed away from actually, you know, forcing this on us in any kind of way, shape, or form. We haven't heard from them in several years,
so,
at least at our level.
Yeah.
I mean, they talked to Joe, obviously, about the performance.
Yeah, I haven't had any kind of interference with our
process. So, second question, follow-up question.
Sure.
With some counties that have, and several counties are going to have more trouble with PERS, they're going to have less and less money to do this kind of thing. They're going to cut staff way back. Does that mean that the revenue collected, does it affect the revenue collected?
Yeah, because the revenue collected from this directly is proportionate to the amount you're claiming. And so if you have some staffing cuts and your personnel services goes down, your expenditures go down, and so the amount you get back is going to go down in relation to that.
Unfortunately, and I say this with a little trepidation, that it benefits us because ours will be one of those that continues to be level or rise. Yeah. We're not proposing any cuts in the programs that are part of this thing. So I think Joe's absolutely right. It could be that our percentage of the overall statewide budgets goes up, and that means we may get more money, depending on, again, how much collection is, how much this affects
the collection of the rates. It's all relative to how much other counties are contributing to the pool also, and how much.
Right. You know, I was thinking it was going to go the other way, because if they didn't, if they don't collect on their end.
Well, you know, that's a good question. And I don't know that, you know, things have to be reported.
Are you talking about us or the individual county that's making the...
A county that's saying maybe that they'd have to be making cuts in the clerk's offices, which is where the recording comes in, the money is generated and comes to the pot here that's being divided. So I'm not sure how, unless they close down a clerk's office and we're no longer taking recordings, which they can't do.
Legally, they can't.
So really what the issue more, I think, in this particular case is some county may reduce their assessment and taxation staff as a result of financial issues, in which case that pot of money that's being divided up
will shrink,
but our percentage will go
up. Our percentage will go up.
So you may actually go down. You may get a bigger percentage, but go down.
I don't know.
I was figuring we'd go down.
If I understand your question, the county that you're talking about, the one that would be cutting services, their funds coming back would go down. But our funds, yes.
So the overall pot goes down.
Well, depending again on how...
Well, the overall pot
could... collections will be impacted, but they could.
I mean, if their recording fees and delinquent interest went down along with their staffing levels, then the pot would go down.
Yes.
But if they just cut their personnel services, then...
By no means am I an expert in this area. That's why I asked the question.
I'm not either.
You're asking some great questions.
And there's a lot of variables in play, so it's hard to predict.
We don't know the answers.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's see. So that was the summary of funding as a ratio to grant funds to total expenditures. The next section is the just another summary of expenditures by department. It's just kind of a summary of the previous page that. And then the last page, this is a pretty interesting one. Linda, our county treasurer, Linda Pilsen, creates this for us every year. And it's just a basic comparison of the money going out to the money coming back in for this. As you can see, the last full year that we have on record, 16-17, you can see that we are actually losing money, like you said.
Sending them almost $753,000 and getting back almost $502,000 in return, which doesn't seem like a very good exchange rate.
And that's the whole idea behind this. We're, you know, it's a statewide
program.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, program. They're trying to. Yep. We're basically subsidizing some of the smaller counties that might not have the revenue for this.
And there was a period, if you look back through this 20-year history, where we were getting back more than we were sending, but that's not the case.
And I think that was when the state was kicking in the additional funds too.
Exactly. Yes.
So this is one of the reasons that for my question is as these counties have got tougher, we wind up paying more. And if, let's say, an example, if Curry County even gets worse and doesn't keep up, I think we wind up being hit harder and harder and harder by the other counties. The purge thing comes to, we manage by the 401k more than the purge. We do have some purge employees. Most counties in the state have purge counties and are gonna be hit pretty hard. If I'm right, this number is going to get a lot worse.
It could.
That comes back to us, because we're going to be expected to subsidize the rest of the state when we operated in a good business fashion. Mm-hmm. And I think we have a major problem there. If it's my attitude, I got a problem. I'm going to start screaming.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah. I mean, if Curry County's revenue went down that they're contributing, then it might affect, but if they're just cutting their services, I don't see that affecting us as much.
If they cut their services,
but I think what Terry's saying is look at these numbers. Look at the numbers going out and the money coming back in, and it continues to go down, even though we keep maintaining at least our level of expenditure.
And I think for our side, we've got a lot of real estate transactions, it seems like, for our county, for our size.
We generate a lot of income. Always have.
Right.
And this seems to get more out of whack the larger you get from our county up. The more they're losing in this deal. I mean, Multnomah.
Well, I think we have a legitimate
beef
with the legislature, and we need to take it to AOC and take it personally to the legislators, because this trend does not fit at all with what the real concept was behind this.
Yeah.
And it'd be interesting, Joe, we get the snapshot of what the county gets, Lincoln County gets, but we don't really see what the other counties get.
I've actually got a report, if you guys want to see that.
I can send it to you.
Not right now.
But at some point,
Sure.
Look at that together.
Let's look at it and see.
The state sends us that every year.
Okay.
And the state also sends just kind of a forecast of what they expect the revenue to do a couple years down the road. It's all forecast. I mean, they have no idea what recordings they're going to do over the next couple of years, but they expect recordings to continue to rise a little bit, delinquent interest to be paid off more, so that to go down a little bit over the next couple of years. It's kind of opposing forces there. So the overall revenue is basically unchanged, is what they're anticipating over the next.
The other number I'd like to see in here is if we could get not only this number, but the PERS number from that county, what percentage of PERS.
Yeah, that won't show.
Because I'm going to be suspicious. A lot of counties are going to be in the hurt because of PERS.
Yeah, and without doing
penalize the counties that. Yeah. There's only a couple of us that aren't heavily invested in PERS. Doesn't fit right at all with me.
That's more of an analysis that I think occurs, you know, on a broader scale. And, you know, what are counties doing that have PERS issues? How are they reacting? Where are they making cuts? You know, or how are they paying for it?
Yeah. And I wonder if they're claiming that PERS obligation in the.
Well,
is there an expenditure?
Benefits, you know, that's a another interesting question.
So we can get a lot of questions out of that.
I hadn't thought about it that way. So they reduce the number of personnel, but increase the amount of money they're asking for because of their PERS obligation.
Right.
Ooh.
That's an interesting question.
Yeah, I'd be curious.
We have work to do.
Yeah, I think so too.
This was one that may have to come back to the next legislative session.
Oh, I think it needs to.
Very interesting.
So, Joe, anything else in your presentation? Or
that's all I had, if you don't have any further questions.
Yeah, and just maybe another thing for historical context for people who may be wondering. So I assume we'll be asked to bring this back. Is it next week or soon?
Probably next week.
Next week.
For approval.
Yeah.
That this application, you know, we're just really gearing up for our budget process, and this does kind of seem like the cart before the horse, but again, this is state-driven requirements. It's not our timeline. It's the state's requirement that we get this application in. So, you okay with bringing it back next week, Commissioner?
Yes.
Okay, we'll do that then.
I'd like to thank you for the work you're doing in your department.
Oh, yeah.
And your staff. You guys are doing a pretty fine job from what I can see. So
thank you.
Across the board with all eight.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate that.
Yeah. All righty. Commissioner reports. Anything, Commissioner Thompson?
Kirk Schrader's here for Fisherman's Roundtable
on
Friday. That's not a report, but it's always interesting when we get to talk fisheries issues with him for me, so I'll probably be involved in that.
Very good. Anything else?
It has nothing to do with county official business, but I set my own personal record last night at a middle school track meet. I think it was close to 90 races we did one night. By the end of the evening, luckily I had a second backup starter took over, because when it got to 200 at the end of the meet, I lost my voice.
Wow. That's great. That's great to see that level of turnout. Were you saying, did I overhear you saying that track and field has more kids than all other fall sports combined?
Fall sports.
Total sports.
I think it's
okay.
Think of the number of kids, like here at Newport High School, the middle school, we're around 100 kids, I believe, maybe a little more. And high school, we're like 140 kids. Well, think about that comparison with basketball teams and baseball. Now soccer's new to the mix since that was told to me, but when I ran, that was what they said. Now soccer adds a lot of kids to the program, so I don't know the current statistics. But anyway, last night when you looked at the field, Casey Miller was out there, our publicity man, and that many kids on one field, it's a zoo.
Well, I imagine.
Well, takes a lot of help to make it happen.
Probably the only more challenging thing than dealing with a crowd of young people that big is dealing with a crowd of county commissioners that big. Okay, well, if you don't have anything else, I have a statement that I prepared that is in follow-up to our meeting last week in Depot Bay. We had a lot of public comment, and I just wanted some time to reflect. And so I do want to offer a few comments about the public meeting in Depot Bay last week involving the Board of Commissioners and the Fair Board. And again, these are only my reflections. But I would say that while I'm always willing to listen to public input at any time on any topic, I consider the future location and site of the Lincoln County Fair and the County Commons to be a question that has been settled through repeated opportunities for the public to weigh in. Since 2003, there have been 3 rounds of public input and 2 countywide public votes, and all of these have come to the same conclusion to support redevelopment at the current site. Each of the public processes featured broad-based stakeholder participation and multiple opportunities for public input all over the county. While the results were not unanimous, and there's really never unanimous agreement on any public question, the majority sentiment was clear. That sentiment was reinforced by the public votes in 2007 and 2016 to designate transient room tax revenues to this project. Each of those measures was supported by a 60% yes vote of those who turned out. That was more than 9,000 votes in support of the 2016 measure, which was quite explicit in its intent. At last Wednesday's meeting, the concept of moving the fair to the Toledo Industrial Park property or another East County site was brought forward. This was presented as a new idea, but in fact, this very site was looked at as part of the Blue Ribbon Committee's work, and it was not found to be suitable. Several speakers said the project should be abandoned because it will lose money. While government has to operate on business principles, it is not a money-making enterprise. Government exists to provide community services and community facilities. Senior centers, community centers, libraries, parks, and performing arts centers do not make money, but that doesn't mean we abandon them. While I agree that the need for subsidized, affordable, and workforce housing in the county is great, this site is not suitable for that purpose for many reasons. I'm not willing to abandon stewardship of a property that has been in the county's control for almost 80 years for the same purpose. I think it would be very hard to persuade a constituent of Yahats or Otis or Burnt Woods, who twice voted to support funding for the Commons project, to see the benefit to them building housing for Newport residents. We also heard from one of the members of our Master Plan Visioning Committee that the charge of the committee is unclear. I believe that's not the case. Kevin Greenwood, who served as a consultant on this project in its beginning phases, met individually and briefed members in some detail about the committee's charge, goals, and sideboards. That charge, briefly, is to refine the broad master plan that's already in place to redevelop the property for its current uses and complementary future uses. The committee was not given charge or authority to look at another location. The charge was narrow, clear, and specific. Help us shape a vision for the new Lincoln County Commons, home of the Lincoln County Fair. Thank you. Okay, now is the time to offer the opportunity for constituent input, up to 5 minutes on any topic. Hearing none, my last duty is to announce that our next meeting will be 1 week from today, Wednesday, April 25th. Same time and location, 9:30, right here at the courthouse in Newport. Until then, we're adjourned.